Most of us have some sort of a vision. The question is it the right kind of vision? So, for example, there are a lot of people listening in on this who, on the one hand, you go, man, I really haven't articulated a transcendent vision for my kids, but I do have a vision as it relates to my finances, right? So, I got a vision for what I need to set aside for my kids' college funds, or, in the event that I die, I want to make sure that my family is well taken care of. So, I've got investments, I've got life insurance, things of that nature. But for some reason, when it comes to something even more important, and that is leaving a legacy, what Psalm 127 likens our kids to arrows, we release them at a target for a time we will not see. We don't have a vision.
Hey guys, welcome to the Dads Building Teams podcast, where we chat about exactly that, dads building their family teams. Every week, me and my friend and mentor, Jeremy Pryor, alternate interviewing another father friend of ours about his particular journey as a father, pursuing the call to build a multi-generational team on mission. As always, let us know what you thought of today's episode on social media at Family Teams. And without further ado, enjoy today's episode.
Well, welcome to the Dads Building Teams podcast. I am super excited, you guys, to get to have a conversation with Dr. Brian Laritis. He's on the line right now. Brian, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
I'm good, man. It's storming here in Northern Kentucky. We live just south of Cincinnati. Brian and his family just had a crazy cross country move. You want to tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, man. Sold a house and moved from California to North Carolina in the middle of a pandemic. This is definitely a call that we just feel like God has extended to us. And I'm teaching pastor at a church here called the Summit Church, and we are excited to jump in and serve.
Awesome. Yeah. So I would love to two questions just as to introduce you to the audience. Tell us a little bit about just, your bio, some of your history, just real briefly, and then I'd love for you to describe who's on your family team.
Yeah, so my wife and I, Corey, we celebrate 21 years of marriage on July 3rd of this year, and awesome. We are the proud parents of three boys. Quentin is 19; he just finished his freshman year in college at Biola University, and awesome. Then our middle son Miles is 17; he's going into his senior year, and our youngest son Jaden is 15; he's going into his sophomore year. As far as just milestones go, when our kids turned 10. We just kind of declared age 10 when they officially begin their manhood training. So we teach them how to tie and shine shoes. But we would always take them on missions trips. And we would go to Honduras and serve at an orphanage there, build homes, that sort of a thing. And then when they turned 13, we just did a rites of passage thing with each one of them and pronounced manhood on them. And
awesome.
Yep. And my, I mentioned this in the book. My dad, when our kids turn 11, he would purchase a Bible with that kid in mind for when they turn 13. So for two years, that Bible he'd have his personal devos out of, he would preach out of, and he would write prayers on various pages of that Bible with that specific kid's name. And then when they turned 13, he'd hand it to them, that front page. He would always kind of list out the genealogy, going all the way back to my great-great-grandfather, Peter, who was a slave. And he would recount the faithfulness of God. And so we would – that's a milestone moment we were always careful to mark.
Oh my
so
goodness.
Those are a few of the things that we've done.
That is incredible. So okay, I'm excited to get into this. This is super practical. I appreciate you diving into those milestones. So your father – how did he, like, where did that level of intentionality come from? Like, that is so rare.
Yeah. So, I think you use a very important word. As we'll talk some about, our book, my book, The Dad Difference, and, four gifts we need to give to our kids. But as I've just kind of looked through the rearview mirror at at dads that I really respect, the common denominator they all had was intentionality, right? And which is the opposite of how we're wired as men, because one of the unfortunate gifts we got from Adam is passivity, right? So Genesis chapter 3, you know, Eve is talking to a snake and she eats the apple. And then this little line says, and she turned to her husband who was with her. So here's Adam being passive, watching a snake talk to his wife, and he didn't step up. And that's the gravitational pull we all have as men. It's downward into passivity. We all have to fight that. And so the best dads are intentional ones. And so that's my dad. And, you know, I just kind of pronounced him the patriarch of our, of our family.
That's awesome.
I invited him into this ceremony and just said, man, whatever the Lord puts on your heart, we want you to do. You know, there's other things we would do that weekend. You know, we'd hop on a plane, go somewhere, have a lot of fun, eat good food. You know, they would get the full on sex talk. And then dad would present the Bible and would mark that moment well with them. So it's just being intentional, but I invited my dad in on that.
Yeah. Well, this kind of generational faithfulness, or even the like leveling up every generation so that the intentionality, the clarity about who we are as a family, like this is the trajectory. I just find so much hope for families and for fatherhood when I hear those kinds of stories, when I see, and when especially when dads have hope that they can see that kind of progress over time. And as you've gotten to know your dad, I'd love for you to take us back even. I mean, it sounds like you guys are having multi-generational conversations about, you know, your family's past and how God has been faithful and been, you know, bringing your family through. And so, yeah, how has the family story, how has that played into this? How has this helped, or maybe, you know, as your dad has really worked on being intentional towards you and then his grandsons, like, yeah, talk to me a little bit about the generational, the way that has played out. Did that start with your dad? Did that go back even further?
Yeah. So one of the things my dad is just is really trying to do well is to communicate to all of his grandkids that, hey, you're a part of a much broader context here, and it's not just you. So let me recount the faithfulness. And for our family, as an African American family, we're pretty rare in that we can actually track our family lineage back to pre-emancipation proclamation day. So, you know, as you know, they didn't keep great records on slaves. And but my great-great-grandfather, Peter, was a slave. He was married. When the emancipation happened, the family that owned Peter actually gave him 300 acres of land in Catawba County, North Carolina. And that's where my great-great-grandfather settled. He loved Jesus, loved his wife, married to one woman for life. All of his kids came to know the Lord. One of his sons, Milton, was my great-grandfather. Milton actually took his allotment of the land when my great-great-grandfather died and gave it to a church that's still in existence today in Conover, North Carolina. He was their founding Sunday school superintendent. He had 14 kids. All 14 of his kids came to know the Lord. His youngest son, my grandfather, Crawford Wheeler Loritz Jr. By the way, Milton was married for over 50 years to a woman named Anna. His youngest son, Crawford Loritz Sr., loved the Lord, was married to my grandmother for 53 years, and then he died, and all three of his kids came to know the Lord. Then there's my dad. My dad is the godliest man that I know, and he and mom just celebrated 49 years. So in my direct line, there's no such thing as a man who didn't know Jesus or a man who divorced his wife.
Wow.
And I know for the listener, you know, my legacy for many is probably deflating, because you're going, that is so not me. Like, I don't even know who my dad is. Or maybe you're going, I'm the only or first Christian in my family. And my challenge to you is start a legacy.
Yeah.
So that 150 years from now, your great-great-grandson is, you know, recounting the faithfulness of God that began with your intentional decision to kind of reverse the curse and to start a new legacy.
Yeah, it starts there. And like, yeah, part of the way that we've talked to our audience about that tension, because that it's very real, it can be very deflating and discouraging, is that there are Abraham and Sarah generations, which is God told Abraham, leave Terah, leave your father's house. He's an idol worshiper, start a new family line. And that's why we worship the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, not the God of Terah, right. Abraham. But there's also Isaac and Rebekah generations, like you. Like, there are people whose job it is to build on the legacy of previous generations and the faithfulness that was created there. And, you know, I think one of the things that's been really confusing for me, I'd love for you to talk, because I don't get to talk, honestly, very often with people like you, Brian, who have this kind of story. So it seems like when the church talks about fatherhood or family, they emphasize things like, okay, focus more on your kids, right? Like, be present with your kids, be a better dad. And I've just noticed that for a lot of dads, that advice is, you know, if in the context of individualism, can really backfire, as opposed to in the context of, okay, the reason you're investing so much in your family is because you're building a multi-generational family line. Like that, when I was taught that message, which I actually encountered living in Israel, I was living in Jerusalem and started encountering men who had stories like yours, and I saw their passion for family, and having grown up on the West Coast where I just didn't have a lot of hope for family, that took me from having, like, from a scale of 1 to 10, like my interest in fatherhood was like at a 2, and it took it from a 2 to a 10, and I've never gotten over it. Like, yep. Like if what we're building is, but why aren't we talking about that as a church? Like, what's been your experience? Because this is a really unusual perspective, at least that I find out in the church. Why are we keep telling dads, just love your kids more instead of build a legacy? Does that make sense? Like,
yeah, absolutely. What you're talking about really is having a transcendent vision.
Yeah.
For your kids. And what's interesting about that is, you know, most of us have some sort of a vision. The question is it the right kind of vision? So for example, there are a lot of people listening in on this who, on the one hand, you go, man, I really haven't articulated a transcendent vision for my kids, but I do have a vision as it relates to my finances, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I got a vision for what I need to set aside for my kids' college funds, or, you know, in the event that I die, I want to make sure that my family is well taken care of. So, you know, I've got investments, I've got life insurance, things of that nature. But for some reason, when it comes to something even more important, and that is leaving a legacy, what Psalm 127 likens our kids to arrows, we release them at a target for a time we will not see. We don't have a vision. And I think a part of that is that passivity thing we were talking about. And I think a part of that is just Satan's strategy for us. And you can always tell, especially in America, families that don't have a vision for their kids, because when you don't have vision, you now live for the now and you parent with a happiness ethic. So yes. I just want my kids to be happy. And all happiness is living for the moment. And so what Angela Duckworth, and I'm not sure if she's a great believer, book. But in her in her book Grit, she just talks about how that happiness ethic robs our kids of strength and resilience. But when I have the long view for my kids, I'm actually willing to allow them to experience some discomfort, because I know that that's needed for them to have the kind of resiliency they need to have to be able to live outside the home and make a mark for their generation for the glory of God and the good of others.
So that vision, it requires, again, going back to that, you know, intentionality. I think that one of the things I realized is that if you go into the past, if you go 50, 100, 200 years into the past, the idea of a father obsessively building a multi-generational family was actually fairly common. And I think that the reason was their vision statement wrote itself, which was don't die. Like, they were constantly under, there was the threats that they existed under, you know, just were so much worse if they didn't have a strong family. The only way to survive financially, the only way to survive, you know, all the different health issues, and, you know, all the different safety issues was we had to be a tribe basically as a family. And as we've gotten into this world, as stability has increased, our need to articulate the vision has, we have to articulate it. We can't just rely on everyone just, of course you're going to build a multi-generational family. Otherwise, you know, how are you going to survive? Like, that's not going to, that vision statement's not going to write itself. You're going to have to write it. So how have you thought about that? Like, have you, as you've talked to dads about trying to articulate this in a way that actually will cause them to point their family towards legacy, any practical thoughts about how to start that process?
Well, you know, the other thing I would add to what you're saying, you know, if we take it back to biblical times and even up to 150 or so years ago, before the Industrial Revolution happened, actually a couple hundred years ago, you know, in biblical times and up until the Industrial Revolution, you know, if your family were farmers, you know, or if your family had like a fishing business or whatever, like you were expected to continue that. Yeah. Like when dad, mom died, you were going to get the farm and you were expected to continue that legacy and you were being raised with that in mind. And so, I mean, parenthetically, that's what makes Peter, James, and John leaving their boats and following Jesus so huge, because they're literally leaving behind their legacy for a greater legacy. And to answer your question, Dennis Rainey is one of my mentors. And one of the things he recommended to me years ago when our kids were young, as it relates to just the practical application of vision, he recommended my wife and I take what's called a vision weekend, where we went to a hotel and just through prayer and a lot of conversations, pulled out a blank sheet of paper and just said, what are the values that we want in our kids? Like, that's simple. Yeah. Like having that conversation and then just putting down prayerfully 7 to 10 things that we're just like, we want our kids to reflect this. And I remember some of them, it was like gratitude. We want our kids to be grateful. You know, we've got boys, we want them to be hardworking. And then you craft a game plan around that, which is really no different than how many fathers, they've got vision for their kids, you know, being athletically great, right? Mm-hmm. And so they'll invest in like a basketball goal and spend all kinds of time with them. And but when it comes to things that really matter, all of a sudden we get passive. So I found having a vision weekend with my wife and intentionally talking about these things, codifying it and coming up with a plan to be a real practical way to do the things we're talking about.
Wow. Yeah, that's huge. Actually articulating it, getting on the same page with your wife, working that out, taking the time and making sure that, yeah, this is what it looks like. This is what is going to stamp our family. And this is what we want to pass on. And then talk to me about the next step. So as you and your wife work that out, how did you go about trying to instill these values in your boys?
Yeah. So one of the things I talk about in the book, one of the gifts we need to give our kids is experiences. Hmm. And so, you know, when it came to, I remember one of them is we wanted our kids to be great financial stewards. And so we decided, and it's the age old debate, you know, and I don't think there's any one right answer, but do you give your kids an allowance? And some people say, no, we don't want to pay for chores. We gave our kids an allowance. It wasn't about paying for chores. We wanted to teach financial stewardship. Hmm. And so we just gave them a game plan. We just said, hey, minimum 10% to the Lord, and minimum save 10%. And then the other 80%, you're free to do it what you want to do. And so when it came to, you know, I remember vividly having conversations with my boys. We're walking in the mall and it's time to go school shopping and they want a pair of shoes. My deal was, look, God's called me to meet your needs, not your greeds. So I'm going to pay no more than $80 to $100 for your shoes. Well, then they would find these shoes. It'd be $120, $140. And I would go, you've got money you've been saving, so you can add to that. And then to actually see them stop and contemplate that and oftentimes say no because they didn't want to take away from their savings. Because the other thing we did with them financially is my agreement was, when you turn 16, I'll buy you a car. But I will only buy you a car if you have a minimum of $1,000 in your savings account and you have a job. because if something happens to the car, you're paying for it. I'll pay for insurance, but you're going to pay for gas. And so from the time they start getting allowance, they're putting money away. They've got I'm trying to teach them delayed gratification,
yes,
financial stewardship. But all of that goes back to what was on that sheet from that vision weekend and giving them experiences with that.
I love that. Yeah, that, I think that's so important. If you want to teach your, it's like that, the marshmallow test, like that infamous, like how do you, so much of our success in life is the ability to decide that we're going to put off what is going to be better in the future. If we just, you know, resist all those impulsive, like you said, which is ironic because the vision, if you don't have a vision for your family, I like the way you described it. The vision that's written for you by the culture is make your kids happy, which is really the worst vision you could ever have because it will cause you to not instill in them wisdom or instill in them the ability to delay gratification. And so giving them a, like a really concrete goal, like, okay, you know, so what age, by the way, did they know about the car? When do they start to save $1,000? So there's some like amount of months or years that they have to have this goal in mind.
Yeah, we started giving them an allowance around, I think around age 8, 9, 10, somewhere in there.
Awesome.
And then I also remember, you know, they went to Pine Cove Camp every summer down in Texas. And the way that camp worked was it was cashless. And so you had to set up an account. And my deal with them, they've been going to that camp since they were in second, third grade. My deal with them was whatever you save and put down, I'll match.
Hmm.
Right. So, you know, one kid, they put $75 down. I put an additional $75 down. I remember one time dropping our kids off at camp and going with them to the camp store. It's the first thing they wanted to do. Now, camp hadn't even started yet. And I remember this one kid had $75 for the week and watching them spend $40 in the camp store on the day camp was supposed to start. And I'm going, ooh, I don't think that's a good decision, but it's your money. So they went ahead and did it anyways. And then just letting them live with the consequences of you've just spent half your money and camp is just starting. So trying to let them live with the outcomes of their decisions is tough. So,
yeah, very much. Man, that's good.
Hey guys, did you know that me and Jeremy created a special fatherhood masterclass we do online called The Skill of Fatherhood? If you want to immediately level up your father's skills and learn an entire system with tips and tricks and philosophy and help that we believe can fundamentally change your family's life forever, then this masterclass is for you. There's an entire module on the skill of training your kids with about 8 teaching videos in that one. There's an entire module you get on the skill of coaching your family as a team on mission with 8 or more videos in that one, including multiple interviews with a bunch of families doing this and how they do that. And an entire module on the skill of building multi-generational legacy and vision for your family with about 7 or 8 videos on that. The masterclass also comes with a workbook that walks you through the process so you never feel overwhelmed but feel equipped and encouraged and ready to start leading your family in a bigger and better direction starting today. And we want to hook you guys up. So our podcast listeners, if that's you and you're listening, we want to give you an exclusive deal that we aren't doing anywhere else online. So if you want to get $20 off the masterclass right now today, then head to familyteams.com and use the code DADS. That's DADS at familyteams.com. Again, that's the code DADS to get $20 off at familyteams.com.
So in the book, just so the audience knows, the book is called The Dad Difference, the 4 most important gifts you can give to your kids, which include relationship, integrity, teaching, and experience. Talk me through the teaching one. I know that there is probably, I tend to see there's kind of 2 kinds of dads. There's kind of the quiet dad, which I kind of fall into, which is like I'm fairly introverted. And so I have to really push myself to engage in teachable moments and try to take advantage of that stuff. Then there's kind of the over-talking dad, right, who lectures their kids even when their heart is hard. And so what have you learned, or how would you coach a dad in the area of teaching their kids?
Right. Yeah, there's several things I would say, and that's a great question. One, I would say, so the four gifts, I use the acronym RITE, Fathering RITE, R-I-T-E, mm-hmm. Relationship, Integrity, Teaching, and Experiences. And it not only worked out because, you know, it's how the acronym is, but I think the first one, relationship, is actually where everything as a father rises and falls. Hmm. I think an equation for a rebellious child is rules without a relationship.
Yeah.
And so if I'm always talking, and when I'm talking, I'm correcting, I'm admonishing, I'm laying down law, but there's not a relational ecosystem by which those rules flow out of, I'm going to exasperate my child, and I got a prodigal in the making, right? Yes. So the first thing I would say is make sure you keep the main thing, and that is we want people to be big and rules to be small. One of the things Corey and I always said as far as our parenting philosophy is we want our default to be yes, unless there's a really good reason to say no.
Yeah.
And we've tried to stick with that, and it's been hard.
That doesn't sound very Christian, Brian. There's a lot of, it seems like that's not the message you get when you just think about Christians. And like I need to tease that out a little bit more, because I think that a lot of us who've grown up or even think about what it means to be a good Christian parent, it's about rules, and it's about, like, you tend to say no a lot. So what is right. that? Like, why is that? And why did you guys resist that?
You know, I wanted my kids to really feel like that we were for their joy. And, yeah. I wanted them to feel, now that said, there's a lot of stuff we said no to, like, you know, when they're 9, 10 years old, asking us for an iPhone. No. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got a strong culture in our house as far as we've always just had video games on the weekends. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff we say no to. So I want to be clear on that. But when we say no, there's always a clear reason as it relates to why. Okay. So, you know, listen, two of my sons have their ears pierced. Mm-hmm. Am I a fan of that? Not really. Would I have done that personally at 16, 17? Probably not. But when they asked me, I says, okay, we should probably have a conversation about it. Mm-hmm. And if I don't have a really good reason to say no, then I'm not going to say no.
Yeah.
And so, you know, those are some of the talks that we've had. Now, on the other hand, they've also said, hey, can we have a tattoo? And I'm like, look, that's permanent.
Yeah.
I want you to make a responsible decision on something that's going to last forever. So I'd like for you to be older than 14, 15 years old.
That's right.
And yeah. we're going to put that off until you're in your 20s.
Yeah.
So again, if I don't have a good reason for it, many times the default's going to be, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Well,
it sounds like you're part of what's happening is there are a lot of, I feel like a lot of Christian parents who still believe that we attain righteousness through obeying the law at some level.
Right.
Right. And so,
right.
And so their theology is somehow causing their parenting to become very, very rule based. And,
yes.
And so, man, that's, as opposed to, it's really through experiencing the grace of God that our hearts are transformed because of the gospel. And it's like, that has got to be reflected in our parenting. I know that, I'm curious how you guys dealt with this. I know that for me, sometimes I feel like there was almost like a, you know, how Paul says in Galatians that the law was like a tutor that brought us to Christ. Sometimes I feel like with really young kids, there's more of that kind of obedience training,
yes.
a little bit more rules, but man, yes. when your kids are getting older and you're building that relationship and you're holding on to the rules too long, that's where I think sometimes parents get into, I think sometimes a really good parenting style for a 4-year-old And then they try to apply that to a 10-year-old. I don't know if you, have you guys worked out, what does the transitions look like, especially in this area of relationship versus rules?
Yeah. So here's where Dr. Tim Kimmel with Family Matters really helped me think through this. And I remember him taking out a napkin and drawing this out for me when our kids were really young. And pretty much he said, look, the goal is Psalm 127. We want to release from our homes arrows and not boomerangs. Right. So that's what we want.
That's awesome.
And so when they're young, the major word is protection, right? Mm. We want to protect. And man, we didn't let our kids do any sleepovers probably mm-hmm. the first decade. I mean, we were uber protective. And then right around 11, 12 years old, now we start to phase from protection to preparation. And with the goal being, hey, look, I want to see you navigate this well. And so, for example, in our house, there's no such thing as downloading an app or music because everything goes through. We got it hooked up through Corey's password or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so our kids know, hey, if I want to download an album, Dad and I need to listen to it together first. Hmm. Right. And that's going to kill a lot of them even asking for it, because they just know Dad and I are going to sit here and listen to it. And Dad's going to ask me, well, what do you think about this and why? Because I want them to thoughtfully process that. Hmm. When they become a senior in high school, I pretty much treat them as if they're a freshman in college. Hmm. And because I want to create an environment to where they can make mistakes under my tutelage and get real-time wisdom and guidance from me.
Yeah.
And so, because I'm trying to prepare these young men for life outside my home. Yeah. And so I literally told my middle son the other day, I says, look, let me just give you the big picture of where we're at. I'm transitioning from more of a father posture to more of a coach posture.
Yeah.
I'm going to always be your dad, but now you're not going to get too many directives from me. Mm-hmm. What you will get from me is advice.
Yeah.
And I just need you to live with the outcomes of your decisions. Mm-hmm. Look, I want to be careful how I say this. My son, my oldest son, in college had a rough first semester. He didn't live up to his potential academically. Mm-hmm. And I didn't get angry with him, but here's what I said to him. I said, looking at your grades and looking at your intelligence, I don't think this reflects your best effort. Is that a good summary statement? He goes, yeah, you're right. I was just out with friends too much. I says, okay, your mother and I have been saving up for your college since you were a little guy. So second semester, if you don't hit this GPA, then the next semester is on you. Hmm. He was like, yeah, well, he didn't hit that GPA. And he admitted again, I just didn't do my best. Hmm. Well, now what's he doing? He's working as hard as he can to save up money for his room and board at school.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to treat them as young adults and let them live with the outcomes, good or bad, of their decisions. And that's tough.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that you're, I think, modeling here that to me really, I think, flows from the multi-generational perspective. It sounds like you want to have a deep relationship with your sons into adulthood. And I think that for a lot of people in our culture, our vision for fatherhood and parenting really stops at 18. And so we tend to, like, you know, treat our kids way too much, way too, you know, like kids for too long. And then there's just a sudden transition. Whereas, man, but what we're all about, we talk about here a lot is how can we continue to be a family team? Not that we control our kids into adulthood, but that, man, it'd be great to have the kind of relationship like you're describing as a coach, to your sons, so that if God were to give you the privilege to work together on ministry projects or mission projects or business projects, or just, you know, as you parent and grandparent the next generation, we want that relationship to be strong. So, yeah. Man, I love that perspective. No, that transition, I think being skilled at making those transitions is critical. We just have a few minutes left, Brian. I wanted to ask you, kind of as we are in a cultural moment where there's just a lot of conversations about how we can overcome racism culturally. And you know, you've just written a book on family. You also wrote a book, which I just saw and I was like fascinated, the letters to a Birmingham jail, a response to the words and dreams of Dr. Martin Luther King. How do you, and what would you say, we have a, you know, somewhat of a diverse audience, but I think there are a lot of, you know, white fathers who have been asking, like, how do we think about this moment? And what does it look like for us to support, you know, maybe, and I've been constantly asking, what is God doing right now? Like, and how do we be part of that? So yeah, could you give us any insights and the connection between what's happening in this moment with, you know, what your thoughts are about fatherhood and family? Yeah. Any thoughts there would be helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a phenomenal question. You know, sociologists, they have a phrase called a condensed symbol. And what it is it's really a defining image that represents a major tipping point or turning point for a generation. So, you know, a condensed image, for example, would be Dr. King laying on the balcony, having just been shot at the Lorraine Motel while his colleagues are pointing in a direction. Like, we'll never forget that image. Mm-hmm. It was a defining moment for a generation. I actually think our condensed symbol is George Floyd lying mm-hmm. face down, handcuffed behind his back with an officer's white knee on his neck. Mm-hmm. Like, that mm-hmm. is a condensed image. And I really believe, you know, while I'm incredibly like sad and exhausted and tired over these events, I'm also incredibly hopeful, because I've never felt so much white empathy and advocacy over an incident like this in my lifetime. This feels in a good way different. So I think your question is, man, how do we leverage and make the most of this moment? And when I look at the scriptures, God has established three institutions for the flourishing of society. The first is a family. The second is the government. The third is the church. And what we're talking about is the family. And as dads, my role is to disciple our kids. And when I think about the discipleship of our kids, that's not just teach them how to have a quiet time and to pray and walk in the Holy Spirit and memorize verses. No, I don't just give them a robust soteriology, doctrine of salvation. I also should give them a robust anthropology, a doctrine of humanity. And then I take them to Psalm 139. Look, we're each fearfully and wonderfully made. And I take them to Revelation 5, Revelation 7, where John says, I look up into heaven. I see people from every nation, tribe, and tongue, which means he's seeing differences in color, which means ethnicity is not a fruit of the fall. And so for me, parenting young black men, you know, I've got to have hard conversations with them. Like, when I teach them how to drive, the first lesson is not, here's the gas, here's the brake. It's what do you do when you get pulled over? It's, you know, hands clearly present. No sudden movements. I know you're angry. Don't express anger. It's yes, sir. No, sir. I need you to come home safe to me. But I think for white dads, I really believe racism is a learned behavior, right? And it's not just good enough not to be racist. So the goal is I'm not racist. The goal is not I'm not racist. The goal is, man, I want to be anti-racist. Mm-hmm. Like, so when Uncle Bob puts his feet under your Thanksgiving table and he says the racially insensitive joke or remark, like, I think you got to create some biblically awkward moments where you just cut that off at the pass and you just model before your family what it looks like to honor people as image bearers of God, regardless of their ethnicity. That stuff begins in the family. And that's the dad's role in helping to form their kids into that image.
It seems like that what you're describing, just for us as dads, as leaders, is going to take a lot of courage. I mean, to have those hard conversations, to be willing to stand up in those circumstances. I think that being passive, like that's how we started this conversation. That's how we got here, right? And when I think about the legacy of how so much of this is overcome, it's just very, very a great sacrifice and amazing, courageous men and women. We all have to have a part to play in that. Well, this has been a really great conversation, Brian. I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us and our audience. Tell us about tell us a little bit more about the book and just how people can get a hold of you.
Yeah. So to find out more about me, you can go to brianlaritz.com. As far as getting the book, I think any internet bookseller, you can go to Barnes & Noble, walk in one of their stores, or you can just order online or Amazon. All of those places carry the book.
Awesome. Well, this is Dr. Brian Laritis, author of The Dad Difference, The Four Most Important Gifts You Can Give to Your Kids. Thank you so much, Brian, for being on. I know this is a crazy busy time. Can't imagine with you guys moving across the country and everything that's happening. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you.
All right, guys, that's all we have for today's episode. Remember, you have what it takes as a father equipped by the Holy Spirit to lead your family as a multi-generational team on mission. And as always, remember to let us know what you thought about today's episode at Family Teams on Instagram, at Family Teams on Facebook. Search for us there, easy to find, and you will find us. And let us know what you thought, whether something that stood out, something that was encouraging, or some feedback you would like to give us. All right, have a great rest of the day.